Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for coming. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Catherine Sherwood, and Dr. Dana Henry, who is not here. You can see the title has been substantially shortened. So what I'm going to talk a bit about today is this concept of adolescent sex being conceptualized as inherently risky. And so some of the factors in the original title certainly play into what I'm going to talk about in terms of refusal skills, con use, et cetera. But sort of this research is a little bit preliminary, and I'll explain a bit why that's the case. But the idea that we sort of have been discussing among my co-authors is this concept of inherently conceptualizing adolescent sex as risky just because it is adolescents having sex. And so we're sort of presenting a bit of data and posing some more questions than perhaps we're even answering. I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. So adolescent sex has been conceptualized as inherently risky and associated with a range of negative health behaviors, for example, engaging in sexual activity with a stranger or an acquaintance or friend has been associated with other risk-related behaviors such as substance use and skipping school. Has also been associated with drinking alcohol or just sort of discussed in ways in which adolescents are engaging in sex with folks that, or with other adolescents that they don't know very well or other people that they might not have a relationship with. And as a result, previous research has linked adolescent sexuality to risky behavior and conceptualized adolescents engaging in sex as part of a larger pattern of risk. And so when you look at some of the previous literature looking at adolescent sexual behavior, it's been discussed as a propensity toward risk engagement. And so it's been conceptualized linking adolescent sexuality with other risk-taking behaviors. And in part, so other examples, as I mentioned previously, alcohol and other substance use, engaging in risk-taking daredevil stunts, driving fast, not wearing seatbelts, engaging in other sort of risk-related things, like talking on the cell phone, et cetera, skipping school. So part of the reason that adolescent sex has been lumped into this category is because the idea that adolescents don't understand the long-term ramifications of the behavior that they're engaging in, and that includes engagement in sexual behaviors. And so they don't understand the long-term ramifications of engaging in sexual behavior, and so that sort of gets put in with the other risk-related behavior like driving quickly or skipping school because they don't understand the long-term ramifications of these decisions. However, looking at other literature, some research suggests that adolescents may engage in some protective mechanisms. For example, 69% of high school students, or middle school students, excuse me, have reported using condoms the last time they engaged in sexual intercourse, and a large 88% of adolescents have used some form of contraception. So there's other research to suggest that although adolescents are engaging in sexual activity, they might be taking some protective and preventative measures in that engagement of activity. So this current study was aimed at, or part of this, realize this mouse is in the way. So part of this research was examining this propensity toward risk model. Given the previous research that links adolescent sex to other risk-taking behaviors, and then other research that links adolescent sex or discusses adolescent sexuality linked to other protective behaviors, we wanted to examine this concept of is it appropriate to link adolescent sexual behavior as part of this propensity toward risk model. And so we examined the extent to which engagement in sexual behavior, just looking at oral sex and vaginal penile intercourse, is that predicted by risk-taking behaviors such as substance use and performance in school. Now, we collected data from middle and high school students. Unfortunately, what had happened as a part of this data collection was that initially, the school district had approached my co-authors about collecting this data, and then unfortunately, there were some issues with collecting the data, which resulted in us having to obtain active consent. Rather, initially, we were supposed to be able to collect the data with passive consent, which would have likely increased our sample size and made data collection a lot easier. Unfortunately, we had some issues that resulted in us having to collect active consent, which resulted in a very low response rate. Our final sample, so we collected data from a large Midwest school district, and what ended up resulting was a sample of about 245 students, and this included those who answered our dependent variable, meaning did they engage in oral sex or vaginal penile sex. And so we used chi-square and logistic regressions to examine the association between sexual behavior and other risky behaviors, the substance use and the performance in schools. So to give you a little picture of our sample, we had a fairly even distribution in terms of male and female. No students identified as transgender. We had a fairly even distribution in terms of grade and primarily white sample. Now these demographic characteristics were similar to the demographic characteristics of the school district. However, like I said, we did have quite a limited sample given the necessity of active consent. So just looking at some of the participant characteristics in terms of the behaviors they were engaging in, we found a little bit over a third had reported engaging in vaginal penile intercourse, and just under half had reported engaging in oral sex. And most of the sample reported having only one or two partners. And we saw a range of adolescents reporting engaging in protective behaviors, such as condom use. Very few had been diagnosed with an STI. Very few had experienced a previous pregnancy of their own or their partner experiencing a previous pregnancy. We had students reporting sexual refusal in order to prevent pregnancy or in order to prevent transmission of an STI. And we found that large percentage of the sample reported not using alcohol or marijuana prior to sexual initiation, their first sexual intercourse. And we also found that students reported reasons for not using condoms, such as using other contraceptive methods that included birth control or withdrawal. So we had students saying that they didn't use condoms, but they were still using other protective mechanisms to reduce the likelihood of pregnancy. We looked at relationships between substance use and school performance and engagement in vaginal penile intercourse and oral sex. We did find a relationship that if you look, for example, here, there were more students who reported engaging in vaginal penile intercourse and had used alcohol. But we also found that a lot of students also reported not engaging in vaginal penile intercourse and alcohol use. So I'm going to talk about this in a bit, but we did see this relationship at the bivariate level that engagement in substance use and low performance in school was associated with engagement in vaginal penile intercourse and oral sex. In looking at results from the logistic regression, we found that poor grades, tobacco use, and alcohol predicted engagement in vaginal penile intercourse, and poor grades, tobacco use, and alcohol use, age, poor grades, and tobacco use predicted engagement in oral sex. So those findings suggest perhaps that there is this link between risk behavior, substance use at least, and adolescent sexuality or engagement in sexual behavior. However, when you look at the classification tables, we found that the regression analyses were actually better at predicting folks who had not, or adolescents who had not engaged in sexual behavior, and both in terms of vaginal penile intercourse and oral sex, and that the regression analyses were not quite as good at predicting among adolescents who had engaged in vaginal penile intercourse or oral sex. So we found this issue here that, in fact, the analyses were better at predicting folks who had not engaged in sex and were perhaps not as good. So that led us to reconsider some of the findings, or to consider in more detail some of the findings. So when we were thinking about some of our earlier findings, that there was students engaging in some protective behavior. This is consistent with other previous research. We found that less than half the sample had engaged in vaginal penile sex and oral sex. Few reported using substances prior to sexual initiation, and over half reported using a condom or other contraceptive methods. So we can see in that regard, adolescents who were engaging in sexual activity were taking into account some protective mechanisms and engaging in some protection and safer sex behaviors when engaging in sex. But findings from our logistic regression do suggest that perhaps adolescent sexual behavior should be lumped with this risky behavior, as we found the link with substance use and poor grades. So these findings suggest that maybe there is this link there between this propensity toward risk model and adolescent sexual behavior. But then when we looked at the classification table, and as I mentioned, the results from the chi-square, they indicate that perhaps this association is more complex than just lumping adolescent sexual behavior in with these other risk-taking behaviors. So as I mentioned, the classification tables demonstrate that predicting sexual behavior is far less accurate than predicting behavior of those who did not engage in sexual activity. So I think that given the, we think that given some of the limitations in our sample, that it's important to examine this relationship in more detail, as some of these relationships may be more complex than just finding this association between substance use and adolescent sex, putting them in the same sort of risk-taking model. I think that we think that some of these relationships need to be fleshed out a bit more. It's a little bit more complex than just putting them together, given some of the protective behaviors and responses to not just some of the data I'm presenting here, but some of the other data that has been looked at within this sample in regard to adolescents talking to their parents and to their peers about sexual activity and engagement in sexual activity. It's important to acknowledge some of the limitations of our findings. As I mentioned, we did have this unfortunate incident that resulted in a small sample size and selection due to some of the consent limitations that we were required to take into account in collecting the data. But given this complexity in some of our findings, we think that future research certainly is warranted to examine whether or not or how adolescent sex fits in within a context of risky sex. We do find some of these protective mechanisms, but we also find this relationships with substance abuse and performance in school. So it may be the case that some adolescents are engaging in sex and perhaps getting in trouble with their parents or getting in trouble in school because of that, and therefore turning to substance use. It could be that perhaps there's bullying going on, which might result in some of these behaviors. We do have some cross-sectional data, so it's difficult to, we're not suggesting any kind of causality, and it's difficult to determine the dynamics of the relationship, but I think that it's perhaps appropriate to examine this propensity toward risk model in more detail, and future research should be examining this more carefully before we immediately lump adolescent sex in with other risk-taking behavior just inherently, because we are perhaps uncomfortable as a culture with adolescents being sexually active. Thank you for appreciate your time and attention. If you have questions, I think I'd have time to take some. That's something we could look into. We haven't. Some of our ends were small, and so that's something we can look into, but we haven't. That's a good point. Thank you very much.
Thank you.